Hello, 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 and welcome to the Sounds Pepper Podcast. Today, I have an interesting episode. I am reviewing Amine's Limbo album, as well as talking about how much has the internet changed hip hop, how much has the internet influenced hip hop. But before we get into any of those discussions, I'm just gonna plug a few things. Check out my past reviews. On the podcast, I reviewed The Kid LAROI, Fuck Love. That was my most recent review, as well as I reviewed Logic, No Pressure. I reviewed Tyler, the Creator, Bastard. I reviewed Earl Sweatshirt, Feet of Clay Deluxe. I reviewed Juice WRLD's Legend Never Die. I reviewed Pop Smoke, Shoot for the Stars, Aim for the Moon. I reviewed quite a bit of albums so far, and I will continue to be reviewing these albums on the podcast. As well as check out the YouTube version of each of these reviews. I make a YouTube video version of each of these reviews on the Sounds Proper YouTube channel. There's also some video exclusive reviews like West Side Gun, Pray for Paris. That's a video exclusive. Kid Cudi, Man on the Moon. I believe that's a video exclusive. Boldy James, The Price of Tea in China. That's a video. Price of Tea in China Deluxe. That's a video exclusive review, so check those out. Those are a bit more highly edited, highly scripted reviews. And also check out my Single Sunday. That's a weekly segment that I do. The last Single Sunday I did, I talked about Megan Thee Stallion, Cardi B, WAP. I talked about 6ix9ine. I talked about 2 Chainz. So yeah, very interesting stuff. And yeah. I believe that those are worthwhile things to check out. So yeah, getting into the into today's episode, Amine Limbo. I'll be reviewing that, as well as talking about how much has the internet changed hip hop discussion. So I'll get into the discussion, and after we're finished with the discussion, I'll get into the review for Amine's Limbo. So how much has the internet changed hip hop? That is a very interesting question that may or may not thought of. But it's definitely one that I have thought of, and it's definitely one that I just find very interesting, because the internet, it basically just changed the entire world for thousands of years. Information was not nearly as widespread as it is, you know, say like during medieval times. If you want to learn math, right? You'd have to, like, I don't know, go to like the wizard or whatever. but you get the point. Like, it definitely wasn't as easy to find out, like, oh, I want to learn the Pythagorean theorem by myself. You know, besides school, if you want to learn something by yourself, you'd have to, even like in the early 90s, all right, in the 90s, the 80s, and the 20th century, you'd have to go over to a library. You'd have to pray to God that the library has the book that you want. You'd have to check out the book. You have to read through the book. Hopefully the information that you want is in there. If it's not there, you know, maybe you'd have to ask somebody of word of mouth to find the information. Maybe you'd have to take a course, pay for a course. Maybe you'd have to wait and learn it in school, right? So information definitely wasn't as widespread. Nowadays, all you have to do is pick up your phone, pick up your laptop, your desktop, your tablet, your whatever that you're going to have one of them in the vicinity at almost all times. All you have to do is pick it up, go on Google, type in whatever question you have. Like, for example, if you wanted to learn video editing software in the 80s, you know, I'm not too familiar with video, how videos were edited or movies were edited in the 80s. But if you want to learn that, you probably had to take a course in university, which is how much money. Now, I edit all my videos, right? I know how to use a green screen, which is technology they didn't even have in the 80s. But I know how to use a green screen. I know how to chop videos. I know how to insert effects, right? And I did that all by watching a few YouTube videos and tampering with myself. So the point is that information and just access to a lot of things is much more widespread. And that leaches into every part of society, every part of culture, including the music industry, including hip-hop. So how has the internet really affected hip-hop? And it has definitely affected hip-hop in more ways than one. So first of all, accessing the music. So before, you know, there's records, there was cassettes, then we evolved to CDs. And CDs were like this new thing. You have the disc, you just slide it into the tray, and boom, you get your music, right? And each CD, you pay like $10. You go to the record store, you pay $10 for that new Get Rich or Die Trying record CD. Or you go to the record store, you pay $10 for the Black album, and you have it. You know, and you have your disc, $10 disc, whatever, and it's very portable. It's more portable than a record, like a vinyl. I'm not really sure the difference between a cassette, but I think the quality is better than a cassette, right? So you get the point. CD was the big thing, but around that time also is when the internet was a big thing, and burning these discs were very popular. Bootlegging these discs were very popular. A lot of mixtapes were being put out on these discs, right? But that was just the beginning of how the internet changed hip hop. It definitely changed the way, you know, discs were used. But just beyond discs, now we have the advent of iTunes, where all your music is digital. You have it all in this one digital library, and the iPod, and you know the advent of the iPod and the portable music player. That was a very big thing. That was like, if you had an iPod, you were the shit. Now, I wasn't really around for that time, but from the research that I've done, you know, the iPod was like it was basically AirPods in 2018. That's what the iPod was in like the early 2000s. You know, you have all your digital music. It's much more portable than bringing around a whole case of CDs. You know, you just buy the music off iTunes, right? And, you know, a record was around the same price as if you would like buy the CD or whatever, but it's much more handy. So that is, you know, how the internet further progressed into how we consume hip hop or just music in general. But then with the advent of iTunes, we also got other websites where, like LimeWire, where you could get this music for free. You could get this music illegally, and that had a major impact in the music industry and how you know, people put out music, and also the government. There was a lot of government intervention, you know, but a lot of people, they were getting a lot of their music for free, and you know, they had to be very tactful to miss out on viruses and not to accidentally download porn or whatever. But it was a very extremely convenient that, you know, you could either buy music, you know, illegal, you could get some music legally, you have it on your iPod, you have it on your laptop, you know, you don't have to bring carry on all these discs, or you could just go on like even YouTube to MP3, which is kind of what I use now. I allegedly use but you know, people just go on LimeWire and download whatever fucking music they want. Very simple. So that is, you know, the way, another way in which the internet affected music, affected the subgenre hip hop. And so then, you know, the government kind of cracked down on all these websites. And we, you know, after a few years, we get the advent of streaming services, which is the era in which we're in now. So now you just pay $10 a month, or if it's like SoundCloud, like $6 a month, and you get access to millions of songs. So it went from like paying like $20 for a vinyl, or like $10 for a CD, and or $10 for a digital release for one album, to doing $10 for any album you really want. And I know for me, I get extreme bang for my buck. Like, I listen to about at least three different albums every day. So, you know, there's going to be repeat albums. So let's just say I listen to a very conservative estimate, 15 different albums in a month, which is definitely not true. I listen to more than 15 albums every month. But let's just say I listen to 15 albums every month. Now, if I was doing that in the iTunes era or in the CD era, that is a conservative estimate, $150 a month. But I'm accessing 15 albums for $10 a month, which is insanely good. It's insanely good. And now, you know, since the streaming, you know, people are waiting until midnight to hear the release, and people can are forming opinions about a record literally hours after it releases, which is insane. You know, people would have to wait weeks after the release of a record, you know, just to hear it when it was like on vinyl, cassette, or whatever. You know, with CDs, you had to wait until the stores open, whatever. You had to get the CD, you had to pay $10. So yeah, the internet has definitely had a massive impact in how we consume music. But how about the music itself? How has the internet had an impact on the music itself? Or has it had an impact on the music itself? And yes, that is a definite yes. So on a past discussion, I talked about deluxe album culture, because we're seeing a lot of deluxe albums being released and longer albums. I discussed deluxe album culture in, I believe, the Kid Laroi episode. If not, I discussed it on the Logic episode. It was one of those two. But when I was discussing deluxe album culture, I talked about how, you know, or I'm not sure if I talked about it, but a lot of the reason why we're seeing a lot of these deluxe albums, the reason why we're seeing a lot of these longer albums is for streams, is for artists to exploit streams. You know, you have all these songs, you know, more songs means more streams mean more money. In, you know, when people are releasing CDs, like fucking Lil Wayne had no incentive to make his record to 20 tracks instead of 13 tracks, right? Or Jay-Z didn't have any incentive to make the Blueprint 22 tracks rather than 14 tracks, right? Or 15 tracks, my bad. Now you're seeing a lot of longer albums. Now you're seeing more and more deluxe albums for streams. So for artists to exploit streaming services or exploit the audience, basically, for more streams, for more money. So we're definitely seeing a difference in that. And that also has implications in quantity over quality, which is something I already discussed in a past discussion. You could check that out on the Sounds Proper podcast. But yeah, we're seeing a massive difference in how this content is being put out, as well as the content itself. And we're seeing a lot of the change in the hip-hop underground. For example, the collective Odd Future, the collective ASAP Mob, Justin Bieber. I know he's not a hip hop artist, but I'm just gonna use him. You know, Odd Future, Justin Bieber, ASAP Mob, JPEG Mafia, Joey Badass. These are all acts that couldn't have existed if it weren't for the internet. If it weren't for the advent of the internet. If it weren't for the expansion of what people can listen to, because of the internet, people can listen to any genre they want. Like, people can listen to anything they want, really. Like, now, because anybody could put anything out. You know, before, you had to have a record, or you know, had to be signed to a record label. You had to, you know, have a way to get your album, your records out. You know, and it wasn't like the easiest thing. But now, because of the internet, all you have to do is record whatever. You know, you can even record it in your mother's basement. You can record whatever you want. And you could upload it on Spotify with relative ease. You could upload it on SoundCloud with relative ease, right? Now that, you know, the internet, now that music is more widespread into access for people, now that also is more, there's more widespread in access to artists, right? So now, like, for example, I highly doubt JPEG Mafia and JPEG's Mafia would be an art or be a relevant artist if it weren't for the internet, because his abstract style more than likely wouldn't have caught on to record labels, and you would have had to get a deal more, because it was harder to be an independent artist outside of the internet age. So you'd have to get a deal, which would have been hard for him because he has a very abstract style. And I believe his style was very influenced by internet culture. It's very sample heavy. He has a lot of weird samples that more than likely you can't really obtain if it wasn't for the internet. And just what he is saying, and this is the case for a lot of other artists, I would even say to the extent like Denzel Curry, like a lot of what they're saying, a lot of their subject matter, it wouldn't be a thing if it weren't for the internet. If we look back in like Odd Future, they got their start by gaining interest on the internet. Their music doesn't get radio play. Radio play was a much more important thing before the internet and now that after. Like right now, I have a disdain for the radio, and I could talk about that on a different discussion. But right now, you do not need to get radio play to be relevant at all. You know, Drake is still getting the radio play. Travis Scott's still getting the radio play or whatever. But I don't think an Odd Future member has ever gotten radio play. And Tyler, the Creator, is an extremely relevant artist. Earl Sweatshirt is an extremely relevant artist. You know, Casey Veggies, he's still doing his thing. Domo Genesis is still doing his thing, right? They wouldn't have gotten their start if it weren't for the internet. You could make the same argument for A$AP Mob, right? You could make the same argument for A$AP Rocky, you know, how A$AP Rocky, he got his start with his mixtape. I think it's Live Love A$AP, and then his debut was Long Live A$AP, I think so. With his first mixtape, that wouldn't have really been able to be possible if it weren't for the advent of the internet. So not only is there a change in how we consume hip-hop and how we consume music, but also how it gets out there. I don't believe that the hip-hop underground would be flourishing to the extent that it is now. Like even artists that you could expect to have been a success, even if it weren't for the internet age, I'm thinking of artists like Rock Marciano, Freddie Gibbs, West Side Gunn. You can make an argument that these artists would have been relevant in the hip-hop underground or even in the mainstream, but in the hip-hop underground. You can make the argument that these artists would have been relevant even if it weren't for the internet. But is that really the case? Is that really the case, honestly? Like, the more people are able to access these guys' music. So, no, I don't believe that these guys would be as relevant. These guys would be making as much money as they are from their music because of the fact that they are able to go independent in 10, 15 years ago, that was almost an impossibility. They are able to go independent for long, extended periods of time. They are able to gain a massive following or a relatively big following just through marketing their music on the internet. So yeah, you can make a case that, say, for example, like West Side Gunn, he released a mixtape in 2005 when the internet wasn't nearly as big as it is now, and he went on a hiatus. He came back in like 2017 when the internet was flourishing, and that's when his career really took off. Right. So yes, the internet has definitely changed. You know, there's a lot more artists that are relevant. There's a lot more artists that you can find that, you know, match your specific music needs, your specific music tastes. And I believe, you know, this is the internet has helped to push the boundaries in abstract and alternative and jazz rap, right? In alternative hip hop, abstract hip hop, jazz rap, in a lot of the shows and a lot of the different subgenres in hip hop. And I honestly believe that if the internet didn't exist, I don't believe that trap would be the most popular version, the most popular subgenre of hip hop. I honestly don't believe that, because I believe that we would have just got an extension of the bling rap, and we've got derivatives, stuff that like are very derivative of bling rap. Of that era. So yeah, that is, in my opinion, how the internet has changed, how it has morphed hip hop. It's a different discussion if it was for the best, if it was good or not. That is another discussion that can be had if it's been a positive thing or a negative thing. But it is undeniable that not only has the internet had a significant, has been significant in the way we consume hip hop, as well as in the way it's made, and what gets out there, and how much people and artists can access with their music. Anyway, that has been the discussion, and now let's get into the Amine Limbo review. All right, so Amine Limbo, let's get straight into this review. So on August 20th, Amine released this album. Adam Daniel is a 26-year-old rapper from Portland, Oregon. He began his rap career by releasing a couple of mixtapes, with the first one being called Odyssey to Me. He broke through to great amounts of popularity with the single Caroline with his debut studio album, Good For You, that released 1 year later, 1 year after the single Caroline. His latest project was released in 2018, and that one was called 1.5, which had the hit Reel It In. Amine would tease at a new project with the release of a single in early 2020 and the release of two more singles. This album is 14 tracks, 13 songs with a runtime of 44 minutes. That album is Limbo, and I'll be reviewing Limbo to see if it sounds proper. All right, so I have an interesting history with Amine's music. When his first major hit single, Caroline, when it first got big, I wasn't really a fan of it at all. You know, I kind of heard it all the time. It was a bit hard to escape, but I just disliked it. But in hindsight, you know, I listened to the song, you know, a few weeks ago, and that song's pretty good, you know. And I also liked his last project, 1.5, and that project wasn't really close to being perfect. It definitely showed that Amine had potential for the future. And this album, Limbo, it is Amine realizing his potential as an artist as well as a rapper. With all 13 songs on the project, Amine crafts each song as being distinct from one another. While being musically diverse, the ideas presented have strong foundations in which he builds upon these foundations with his talent, with the features, and with the beats. With the beats are varying, deriving from, you know, a typical trap sound, all the way to being like very neo soul and R&B inspired. Also, the features, they all provide a quality performances, whether that be verses or choruses. Let's just go through the track list, come to a conclusion why I feel this way about Amine's Limbo project. So the first track in the track list is called Burden. The song here, it has a very prominent sample from the West Side Gun song. I believe it's called WrestleMania 20 off Supreme Blientel, I think, or Hitler Wears Hermes. I don't really know. But West Side Gun's WrestleMania 20. It has some wailing vocals from Anderson .Paak. It has some very tangy strings and some bouncy drums that are all supported by a deep bass. The chorus from Amine is simple, yet it is effective, and it is extremely catchy. And while he doesn't really stay consistent on a singular topic within the song, his verses are quite topical as he explores these topics that he wants to talk about. You know, he explores these themes with good rapping as well as good writing. It's a very solid song to start the album off on. The next one, we have the song Woodlawn. This song's a little bit disappointing. Maybe not disappointing, but it's a little bit underwhelming. The beat here, it comes off as a very generic. It's just a very generic trap beat, you know, some trap drums and like a boring woodwind that you would hear on any other trap beat that has a woodwind. I just didn't really care for the woodwind that was lacing this beat here. The lyrics are very standard hip-hop hedonism, talking about money and to also talking about girls. And even the hook here, it comes off as being a little bit dry, you know, lacking anything of substance, really. The next one is an interlude. This interlude is called Kobe. And this interlude, it has Jack Knight. And Jack Knight, you know, after a few songs, he has some passages where he just, you know, talks about different things. But he gets a dedicated track for an interlude where he talks about the death of Kobe and how it really affected him, how it kind of, you know, it kind of felt as if a part of his childhood was stripped away from his death. You know, he kind of grew up with watching him or whatever, and how that kind of forced him to look at maturity in a different way, for him to be a bit mature. Now, I'm sure Jack Knight is speaking in the perspective of Amine, but I don't know. Maybe Jack Knight's just speaking for himself. I don't know. The next song is called Roots. The instrumentation here, I like the instrumentation quite a bit. It has some sputtering hand drums. It has a prominent hi-hat, and it has some nice keys to fill up the empty space. Also, the hook here is very dulcet, with Amine and Charlie Wilson kind of helping each other out vocally. Is very harmonious, and it's very coherent. Amine's verse, he has a good enough verse, but the better of the two verses comes from Jid. Jid, he cruises over the beat with ease, talking about his, you know, his roots, you know, kind of relating it back to the title of the song. You know, he talks about his roots, and he also talks, he has some words of encouragement for people to pursue their ambition. And Amine, he also kind of follows this path lyrically. However, I believe Jid just executes it a little bit better. The next song is called Can't Decide. This song here has Amine doing the kind of half singing, half rapping, you know, rap singing on his verse. And he sounds quite good while doing so, with him talking about a girl. It's a bit surface level in which he talks about the girl. But nevertheless, it's quite interesting. It's quite compelling. He has a pretty clever set of bars on the pre-chorus where he relates that swimming. He talks about swimming, but he also kind of relating it to having sex, obviously with this girl. And this is all brought together with an instrument, with a really good instrumental that has some Latin strumming, as Latin sounding strumming. I'm not sure of the exact instrument, but it also has some supporting drums, and it all holds the beat together very nicely. This is like the most profound track on the track list. However, it is very nice, nevertheless. The song after that is called Compensating. I already talked about the song Compensating on a segment of Single Sunday. I believe that was two weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. This song is featuring Young Thug. So yeah, I'm just going to go over this. I'm going to be brief while talking about it, because you could just check out that. I like the song. It grew on me a bit. And I also like the song in the context of the track list, which is a plus. I believe Amine is good vocally. Young Thug's very expressive, eccentric, interesting vocally. And yeah, it all comes together to make a really good song. Next, we have the song Shimmy. This song is inspired by Old Dirty Bastard's Shimmy Shimmy Yaw. But the song explores like a different take on, you know, Shimmy Shimmy Ya. The beat has some soulful vocals, it has some heavy drums, and it has some occasional strings. Amine on the song, he just comes busting through, claiming his stake in the current hip-hop hierarchy. I really like how he is very expressive, almost braggadocious, you know, but in like a weird way, kind of also a little bit humble. He has a very funny line referencing, if you've seen the 2018 All-Star Game, when Fergie performed the national anthem, it was very bad. You can check that out on YouTube. It had a lot of people like laughing at her or whatever. But he has Amine has a very funny line referencing this performance, referencing this rendition of the national anthem that Fergie did. With the line, "You thought you made an anthem, but you thought you made an anthem, but you just sang you a Fergie," which I found to be pretty funny. He also has some other witty lines on the song. This is overall just a very solid track. The next one is called Pressure in My Palms. The song here, it feels very grimy. It has like a very industrial tinge to it, with a droning bass line and some trap drums. It just really all comes together nicely. I like the beat here quite a bit. Also, Amine's hook, it is very interesting. I believe when I first heard it the first few times, actually, without looking at like the credits, I thought that somebody else performed the chorus. I didn't think it was a meaning with a vocal filter, but the vocal filter, it makes them sound very smooth. It makes them sound very robotic, actually. But I like it quite a bit. The song, in my opinion, it borrows a lot from the Kanye West, but more specifically like Yeezus. I believe that the writing is very similar to how Kanye writes, but I believe also the sound, it's very similar to something that could have landed on Yeezus or even The Life of Pablo. You know, I this is supported by the fact that Aminé references Ye, you know, but with a set of lines where he, you know, goes on like, nigga, we major, come on home, we major. You know, he references Kanye's song, We Major. So I believe, you know, he took some influence from Kanye on the song. But yeah, I'm not going to go too long about that. The verses from the performance are all of quality. So Slow Ties verse is short. It's, I believe, four lines or six lines, but it's short, but it's very expressive. It's very eccentric, and it leads into Vince Staples' verse quite well. And Vince Staples, he performs quite well. The beat, you know, it switches up for the second half, or more like the last third of the song. But nevertheless, you know, the beat switches up. And, you know, I kind of like the second beat better. I don't know. It's really hard to compare. But the second beat is a bit more sweet. It has some nice female vocals, some synths, and some peppy percussion. Yeah, there's just a lot going on with this song, really. There's just a lot going on with the song. But somehow, it just all comes together really well. The next song is called Riri. This is also one of the singles that came off, that was released. And this is the second single for this album. And yeah, at first, I didn't really care for the song at all. It was one of my least favorite. And I'm not going to say this was like one of my favorite songs on the album, but this song definitely grew on me quite a bit. The beat is sunny, and it's very sunny and sweet. It kind of reminds me of a beat that could have ended up on the latest Code of the Friend album. Code of the Friend Everything. On the hook, Aminé, he sings about a girl that emotionally hurt him, emotionally impacted him by breaking off a relationship with him, and how that, you know, he shouldn't really care, he shouldn't really be affected by this all that much because she wasn't really with him from the beginning. She wasn't really with him when he was struggling. Aminé, he describes this relationship in a way that it seems as if it's not good for both parties. It sounds very toxic, and the only reason why this relationship sounds like it's being strung along, the only reason why it sounds like it's strung along is because of, you know, lust and also mutual ignorance. And yeah, just overall, even though, you know, the themes are a little, you know, it isn't like the happiest thing ever, it's a pretty good song, and I like the contrast that Aminé has with the rapping and, oh, sorry, I hit my mic, with the rapping, but also with the singing. The next song is called Easy, and this one features has a feature from Summer Walker. This song has Aminé just going full on R&B with the slower and more sensual beat, and with the singing. You know, the singing is just all around. There's very few parts where there's rapping. And also, as I said, the Summer Walker feature. When Walker and Aminé's vocals are separate, I do like the singing from both of them quite a bit. But when, you know, they sing in unison, when they sing together, it sounds like a little bit of a mess. It isn't really, like, really grating on the ears or anything. But it's a bit messy, and I just prefer when their vocals are separate. Subject matter-wise, this song, it's about maintaining a relationship. And how maintaining a relationship isn't easy. And it's also about the things that you would go through while being a part of a relationship, while you are in a relationship, and how just life isn't really easy, and, you know, how that can wane on a relationship. The next song is called Mama, and obviously this song is dedicated to his mother, and it's a very sweet song that is dedicated to his mother. In the vein and likeness of a lot of other songs dedicated to mothers, you know, a very standout example is Tupac's Dear Mama. You know, that's probably the most popular and most celebrated one. But in the likeness of like songs like that, he talks about things that his mother has done for him. He talks about the good and the bad times that he and his mother has gone through. as well as the fact that he has a very deep admiration for his mother, as a lot of people have for their mothers. You know, an example of this, of what I was just saying, is the line here. First year, I moved out. I was struggling. Didn't want to tell because I knew that you'd be worrying. You told me to go back to college, but I went back to Cali. Had to celebrate a couple birthdays without me, right? So that's kind of reflecting like some of the tougher times that he shared with his mother. Not really shared, but in which he kind of dealt with that related to his mother. His relationship with his mother, rather. The instrumentation here, it complements what he is singing quite well with the sweet piano and the drums. And while it is not the most original song, obviously this concept of a song has been done countless times, it has been done more times than it has not been done. It is a really nice song. It's a really good song. It's really it sounds as if it's very heartfelt. You know, sounds very from the heart, dedicated to his mother. And you know, as I said, it's of quality. It's a quality song. The one after that is called Becky. The song is called Becky. The singing here that Amine does decide to engage in, it goes over quite well. It is very expressive, and you know, Amine's voice just takes up a lot of room in the song. You know, has a lot of volume. Amine, he talks about a relationship that he has with a white girl, and the struggles that dating a white girl, as you know, him presents. He talks about the societal issues, you know, like going to a restaurant and receiving, you know, disapproving looks, but also, you know, probably the harder thing, the most, probably even the more heart-wrenching and disappointing thing is the fact that his parents generally disapprove of the fact that, disapprove of dating a white girl. You know, the line, and all of this, you know, the societal and the familial and societal issues really feds him up. An example of this is on the pre-chorus is, Mama said, don't ever bring a white girl home to me. Papa said, niggas catching cases every week, so you best stay on your feet, right? So, you know, obviously his mother doesn't really want him dating a white girl, and his dad doesn't really care for him engaging in music. You know, he wants him to stay on his feet, get a job. The beat here, it is very sweet. It has some nice electronic chimes. It has some lush strings, and it has a substantive set of drums. And you know, as I've said, you know, this song, just subject matter wise, it's really good. It's really compelling. I really do like the versatility Amine presents with the singing, with the rapping, and with the storytelling. The second last song is called Fetus, and this one has is featuring Injury Reserve. Injury Reserve, they have they have vocal contributions as well as producing. The producer, I forget his name, but he produced the song. The beat here, it is actually fantastic. It's probably the best beat here. It definitely sounds very Injury Reserve-y. It's kind of abstract. It's kind of experimental. You know, it's like the main melody here. It sounds like a train screeching. It has some steady strings, has some shrouded synths. And while, you know, with a train screeching, that doesn't sound like the most appealing thing to be in a song. That actually sounds like it would be to the detriment of the song. It actually sounds good. It all comes together for a really good beat. The song here, it deals with the dilemma of dealing with a pregnancy while you are still very young, while as alluded to the song, alluded in the lyrics of the song, dealing with a pregnancy while you are in high school, you know, the fact that you want to have the child, but the circumstances that you would bring the child in, whether that be with your own circumstances and the circumstances of the world and the society, it just isn't favorable. As you know, I'm quite sure as a high schooler, having a baby in any condition really isn't favorable. The Steppa and Richie, the two rappers from Injury Reserve, they share a verse together, and they play into the themes of the song that Amine kind of lobbed up to them. And yeah, just overall, it's just a very good song. It's another very good song off Limbo. And the final track, the closer track, this one is called My Reality. The song has Amine reflecting on the past and coming to the conclusion that he is currently living out his fantasies in life. You know, which is a good thing. You know, I'm happy for him. I'm happy that a black man is succeeding. The verses that Aminé conveys, on the verses, Aminé conveys this fact very well, you know, and he's very expressive. I do like the line where it's like, you know, it's like AI. I'm like, AI, you had to learn about taxes? 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 I also like, you know, he's very expressive. He's like, whoa, what that, my nigga, you know, kind of proving a point when people see him, he's like, oh, what's that, you know, whoa, what that, you know, kind of like caught off guard, you know, out of breath. The chorus, it's very well, it's put together very nicely with Aminé coinciding with a sample. I'm not sure what the sample is, but, you know, it's like, these my fantasies, you know, it's about living out your fantasies, and it plays into the themes of the song perfectly. The track ends, you know, closes off the album with a very gorgeous, vocal section from Daniel Caesar. And yeah, that was Limbo by Aminé. And I'm quite sure, as you can tell, I really enjoyed this album. I think it's a really good album. Even though I knew Aminé had quite a bit of potential from listening to, you know, 1.5 and some of his past music, this album caught me off guard quite a bit. With the very minimal hiccups that this album does have, Aminé was able to expand his artistic capabilities, whether that be with his pen game and his lyricism, or that being his singing, which is really good on this album. You know, his singing, it's very pristine and full. And, you know, if you recently reviewed the Kid Laroi, his album, it's miles ahead of the Kid Laroi singing, and Kid Laroi kind of specializes in singing. You know, Aminé is such a versatile artist. You know, his singing is much better than the Kid Laroi, that's for sure. Yeah, the features, they all provided quality performances. And the beats, you know, while varying in quality, they were all good. They were all good beats, you know. They weren't all, like, top-notch, but they were all pretty good. Yeah, this is just, in general, a top-notch album. And I'm excited for what Aminé has in store for his very bright future. You know, looking at this album. So yeah, the best track for me was Becky. I just adore that song. This was actually quite, you know, hard to decide what the best track was. I was considering Fetus, I was considering Becky, I was considering My Reality, I was considering the opener. I was considering quite a bit, but, you know, I landed on Becky. And the worst track, this one was a little bit cut of dry. I didn't really care for the song Woodlawn that much. But I still enjoyed it, but just not as it's meh. Woodlawn is meh. You know, it's not that I didn't like the song. This album, does not have one bad song. And to conclude, the overall score at this moment in time, the score I'll be giving Aminé's Limbo is a 9 out of 10. This is the highest score I've given yet. You know, even though I've only released maybe a dozen or so, more than a dozen reviews, but maybe like a dozen or so reviews. This is the highest that I've given an album, and I'm really happy that this album was released. This is a really good project. I'm definitely going to be coming back to this quite a bit. This is one of the better albums released this year. I'm ecstatic this was released, and I get to, you know, whatever. Anyway, thank you for listening to the Sounds Proper podcast. This has been Aminé's Limbo review, as well as the discussion of how has the internet changed hip-hop. The hip-hop genre. So yeah, thank you for listening to the Sounds Proper podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe to my YouTube channel, Sounds Proper. If you haven't already, check out my past podcast where I go over a different discussion every week, episode. Go over a different discussion. I review a different album. Also check out Single Sunday. It's a very interesting segment. I enjoy recording them. It's a lot of fun recording them. And I believe it's just a lot of fun, you know, giving my first reaction on these songs. Check out my Twitter at Sounds Proper. I haven't really been all that active there, but I'm going to try and be a bit more active on Twitter, as well as being a bit more active on StoryFire. Hopefully I get permission to upload videos on StoryFire. If I do, I'll let y'all know. But yeah, that has been another episode of the Sounds Proper podcast, and it's time for me to click stop recording now.